everybody, to a new episode of Cloak and Jabber. We're in the middle of 56 hours of continuous jazz. It is Jazz Fest here on the podcast, so strap in, grab your saxophone, and get ready for some bo-ba-do-ba-ba-ba-doom. I'm Alex.
We got fired from our job as Drive Time DJs, and we have been rehired by one of the lowest-paying radio stations in town, the Jazz Station. So here we are, just jazzing it up. I'm the Sizz.
And you are listening, as mentioned, to Cloak and Jabber.
Why don't these songs have words?
Come on, add some words. We are going to be recapping Cloak and Dagger's ninth episode, Blue Note. Different than Brown Note. Don't get confused.
I had 50 jokes about that.
Oh, man. Did I just blow up your spot? I'm so sorry.
The Brown Note is where you shit.
I do know that.
That's a poop.
I'll tell you what. I thought of that when the title came up at the beginning of the episode, at the end of the episode, when he plays the trumpet. I was like, oh, I kind of wish it was a Brown Note over New Orleans.
Yeah, oh, man. There's always sort of a little bit of a Brown Note hanging over New Orleans. but it would have been fun to have that be the basis of a season of television.
Oh, boy.
I will say the episode really played into that as well, where it was like, I just got to figure out how to play the Blue Note to make all my dreams come true.
There we go. That's great. This podcast is going to be great. Pete is off this week, so we can get away with this stuff. We're going to recap the show, and then we're going to give you some notes for the last episode. So let's do it. We're getting to the end of here, so lots to recap. But two characters, Ty and Tandy. Ty has the power to teleport. He can also access another dimension. I should note something. We've been calling it the Dark Force dimension. Mm-hmm. At the day job, I had Olivia Holt and Aubrey Joseph, who play the characters, came to the and I interviewed them. I asked them about the Dark Force dimension, and Aubrey Joseph was like, "We're not allowed to call it the Dark Force dimension. It's called the lower dimension."
Ooh, interesting.
So there you go. There's a little note for you.
The upside down.
Yes.
Why aren't they allowed to call it the Dark Force?
Well, maybe they're saying the Dark Force dimension for something else, but the way that they call it in the show, it wasn't like a Joker on Gotham situation. It seemed more just like, nope, this is a different thing. We're calling this the lower dimension.
That's cool. Yeah, so it does sort of remind me then more of Stranger Things, where it's a shared access under dimension that the entire city of New Orleans, at least, can access.
Yeah, exactly. So he's able to access this other dimension, the lower dimension, where there's a bunch of things, including a record shop, which we'll loop back to in a second. Tandy has a couple of powers herself. She can create light daggers, and she can access people's hopes. They both got these powers during a big explosion on a Roxxon chemical plant. That gave them these powers. It also gave a couple of other people powers at the same time, or rather that energy has given people powers. One of those people is Detective Bridget O'Reilly, who died at the end of the last season and was split into two, a meeker version of herself called Bridget O'Reilly, and the other half of herself who has sharp nails and super strength and is a little wild called Mayhem.
She was too meek to have a cool nickname.
Yeah, there you go. She could be like Mayhem and...
I'm shy.
Shy guy.
Yeah.
They, through a series of circumstances, got merged or decided to merge at the end of the last episode. Mayhem was actually trapped in the lower dimension. When they got out, they were together. We pick up with them on that in this episode. Another character that can access that lower dimension is a guy named Andre Duchesne, a.k.a. Despair. He started to get headaches. We find out more about that this episode. And you found out... that he had the power to suck out people's hopes. And that was the thing that got rid of his headaches. He created a record store, essentially, in this lower dimension that is built out of people's hopes. He's been kidnapping women, stealing all of their hopes by taking them in ambulances, taking them to a hotel, and essentially pimping them out.
Yeah.
And including Tandy, who did that to a couple of episodes ago, she managed to escape, which was great for her. well, I mean, it was good.
It was good for everybody.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Unfortunately, they discovered at the end that Andre had attacked, I don't know if it's attacked is exactly the word, but stolen the hope from her mother.
Yeah.
That's what they found out at the end of the last episode. These women end up catatonic, including a woman who was helping out Andre, who he stole all of the hope from. in order to give him enough power to reach his endgame. His endgame, by the way, he doesn't actually exactly know what it is. He found a vavay, which is a symbol, a voodoo symbol.
A magical power symbol.
Yeah, inside the lower dimension. He's been told it will open a door and it'll allow him to become a god. He doesn't know exactly what that
Aloha.
Means. Aloha.
From the lower dimension.
He figured out that the way to activate that was through music, which, again, we find out a little bit more about this episode. One last bit that you should probably know about going in this episode. There's a dude named Detective Connors who murdered Ty's brother. He was trapped in the lower dimension, repented, decided to be on the side of good and confess everything. But as far as we know in the last episode, Ty's mom murdered Detective Connors.
Yeah, she'd had him captured in their home, was making him a pretty tasty dinner, it looked like.
Yeah, some soft shell crabs.
You know, really good. And then the dessert was murder.
Right. But we didn't specifically see him get murdered, right?
I mean, I think in the when she's talking to the priest in last episode, it was pretty hard pointed at that she did kill him. So
I still feel like there's going to be a twist there because we haven't seen the body, but I don't know. We'll get it.
Maybe,
that.
Yeah, we can get it.
Yeah, we'll get into that. All right. Now that we've set that up, let's go over to Brett Macris, our New Orleans correspondent. He lives and works in New Orleans and sends us notes about the previous episode. So here's some notes for episode 8. About the real city of New Orleans. Brett says, I'd like to open up with saying that Justin is correct. I don't have a drinking problem, but I do have a hangover problem.
Nice. Diagnosed.
There you go. Dr. Justin. They come harder and more frequent because I'm old now, so generally less drinking. Now onto the show. I'll tear up some pinball. Don't get me started. The show opens with a dude I don't know yet, but he's dressed like a voodoo priest. That is Baron Samdi.
Yes.
So we'll talk more about him a little bit. He actually doesn't show up this episode.
No,
so
no.
Not quite important. He's dressed like a voodoo priest, makeup and all. A very dapper voodoo priest, but a legit voodoo priest. They use surnames like Papa, but their official title is Who? I definitely pronounced that wrong. He mentions Emoji Girl. We didn't actually mention her because she doesn't come up this episode.
Yes.
That's Evita, who is Ty's girl, sometimes girlfriend, on again, off again, girlfriend. Her mom was a voodoo priestess, and she died after...
I think it was her aunt.
Aunt, thank you. Died after tangling with Andre Duchesne.
And then she sort of married Ty in a way?
Yeah, kind of.
She sort of killed her life in her plans to become like a doctor, instead became a mambo.
So Emoji Girl's mom's voodoo shop is filmed in a voodoo shop on St. Peter Street called Reverend Zombie's House of Voodoo. It's mostly for tourists, but you can pick up some cool shirts and a couple of voodoo dolls, get your palm read, buy incense if you're into that kind of thing. I am.
Okay.
I am.
Let's put it on your itinerary.
Definitely. I'm going to do a whole Cloak and Dagger tour when I'm down there.
And that's smart.
Yeah, thanks. I'll do that on a preacher tour. Get all of our podcasts out of the way at the same time. The Irish Channel sober living house where the former priest is staying made up, but the Irish Channel is a very quaint neighborhood, quiet and filled with history. Nola Brewing is located there, the Brooklyn Brewery of New Orleans. Chickens run amok through the neighborhood. We should mention Brett is very anti-chicken.
Yeah.
He keeps posting in our Patreon Slack and putting anti-chicken propaganda, and it's very upsetting.
When will it end?
I don't know. Old Mansion's neighbor, old shotgun houses. I don't know what that means. Old Mansion's neighbor, old shotgun houses. The streets are completely fucked up with potholes and tree roots splitting up through the blacktop. People hang out in rocking chairs on their porches. It's pretty cool. Maybe despair just needs an Advil. Sure, you could fuck with people and pull their hopes, but maybe try ibuprofen first. Not necessarily a New Orleans note, but a good note nonetheless.
Good note.
Yeah,
we got a lot of doctors on the pod.
Emoji Girl's auntie tells her it's her time to be Mambo. Mambo is a voodoo priestess, the opposite of a hoogun. Mambo translates to mother of magic, and I don't know if that odd wedding is how you actually become a voodoo priestess, but it seems totally legit. I would also like to challenge Pete to a couple of rounds of Marvel versus Capcom, because that is also my jam. Loser buys a round. And Justin, up, up, down, down, left, right, BA is for 30 lives, but add select start to the end for two player.
You don't have to tell me that. I know that.
I don't know. It sounds like maybe you didn't know
that.
Yeah,
but that's not a note I need to be given. Let me just say that.
I'm just saying it sounds like...
Not something I need.
Sounds like
I
you got it wrong, maybe.
I didn't get it wrong. I'm a big two-player contra player. It
sounds like you're not...
didn't make a mistake.
I don't know. It sounds like you're definitely like maybe in the top 10 somewhere, but not number one.
Would you? That'd be a weird, surprising ranking.
If you were one of the top 10 Contra players of all time.
Yeah. What a great... That'd be a fun reveal, like your real little secret of yourself. Yeah. Like, do you have a secret talent or something that you would reveal? You.
Me? Yeah. I won the Dance Dance Revolution World Championships.
Oh, well.
Last year.
See, that's a great secret talent, something that would never be covered by the press or talked about amongst a group of friends.
Yeah. I mean, why would it come up?
Why would it come up? But your calves are legit strong.
They're gross. Yeah. All right. Let's get into the episode itself because a bunch of stuff going on here. You want to walk us through it?
Sure. Let's talk. We start 96 months ago, which is an odd amount of time.
Right.
That's like how people who are measuring their baby's progress, and they're like, she's 96 months old. And you're like, just tell me what
that
is.
Yeah, just say a year. It's fine.
Yeah.
I like that, though. I like that detail. It was very weird and off-putting. Why do you think they specifically chose that?
I don't know. It seems like a longer amount of time than we would need.
Right.
Back. So that's 8 years back.
Thanks for doing that quicker than my calculator.
That's what I call.
I got up to 92 divided by.
Yeah. Great. I hope I'm right with those numbers. Yes, I am.
Yes.
So it's 8 years back, and where I guess we're seeing him first get his headaches then.
Right.
When he's called Vinyl Man briefly, which I thought was like a weird sort of.
Well, because he's recording. Jason. He's recording the gigs on vinyl, and it was like, yo, dude, use these MP3s that were just invented.
Yeah. That's fun stuff about time.
Check it out on Napster. That was way longer ago than 8 years ago.
Oh, don't even talk about Napster. God, I'm still on there.
Yeah.
What a nightmare. Just uploading and downloading.
Just a bunch of viruses now.
Yeah, exactly. It's me, a million viruses, and a bunch of Dave Matthews Band live tracks. Stay off Napster. I do think that as a sort of the theme of this episode, where we're coming back and we're humanizing this villain who has been, like, horrible. Like,
yeah.
Truly, like... devastatingly bad, and this episode sort of lets us feel how devastating these headaches are for him and sort of see him go from being like a regular musician just trying to make it into becoming the monster that he became. And like, it's weird going into a final episode to really say, like, look, he has some good qualities.
Well, they have that discussion later on in the episode, and I do think that's the point where they're saying, sure, he's a human being. They talk about mayhem. They talk about all of them that... just because you do bad things for a good reason doesn't make them good.
Right.
And he is conclusively evil, is what I think when we find out by the end of the episode, regardless of how you feel with him. That's the journey they take you on. One other note that I thought...
Blue note.
No, this is the thing, is a blue note is a note you expect to go major in jazz, but it actually goes minor.
Yeah.
And that... is such a strong theme throughout the episode that you think, even from the structure, like up until about 5 minutes before the end, you're like, they're going to win. They did it. And then it turns bad.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with everything else where you think that they're going on a path of good, but things actually turn bad. That's what happens with Andre. That's pretty much what happens with Mayhem as well this episode.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that they probably in the writer's room, I'd imagine, came up with the idea of like, Blue Note, how do we play that out?
Yeah.
And then drilled in on it in every single bit of the episode.
And that's why I think this show is so smart. Everything feels very deliberate, and it's something that feels like just his, like, sort of... because it works sort of on multiple levels of metaphor. Like, he's trying to become... to play this perfect note when he's just a jazz musician, just to, like, sync up with a crowd and, like, really be the master of his craft. And then it becomes his motivation throughout where he wants to become a god. And he says finding this perfect note will make him a god. And that's sort of what maybe happens.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, it's the blue note of... them making the major choice, like you said, and then him ending up with a sort of with the minor choice. And that's just the level of layering that they don't ever point at. It's just if you're paying attention, you get
yeah.
it. So smart.
It's very good. We can follow the flashbacks a little bit and then go back to the present. So throughout the episode, we find out Andre's story that he wasn't able to hit this blue note, screwed up his career, goes to commit suicide by jumping off the docks. And at that moment, the Roxxon platform explodes. He falls into the water and gets knocked out, wakes up in a hospital, and he's still alive. But he has these horrible headaches still. But he finds out when this nurse, doctor, actually, I guess, right? Is where we find out she is. Doctor walks up to him, and he holds her hand. He immediately is transported to the empty record store.
Yeah.
Puts on some music and finds that the headaches go away. And that's when he discovers what his power is.
And the music he puts on is from her, the first touch that he has after he has his powers.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you this, my one qualm with this episode, I'm a little over the trope of doctors and nurses being like, I have immediately fallen in love with this patient in this hospital. Yeah. I'm all in.
What a hotbed of romance hospitals must be.
Grey's
Walk
Anatomy.
In a room, someone's got a bedpan, you're like, I love you.
Yeah. There's nothing sexier or more attractive than people who are in a hospital bed, so I get it.
Exactly.
Yeah. But she does. She decides she wants to get back to her music. He essentially tricks her into doing that. And that's how they set up this, I don't even know what you call it, sting operation. It's not a sting operation.
No.
The opposite of a sting operation, where he fills his record store with all the hopes from all these women who have been abused by their boyfriends or their husbands, have been bad in relationships, and he preys on them.
Yeah, this was just like that sequence, which was 85 months ago, which makes total sense, just what I would have guessed. He takes this job where he can just slowly suck the hope out of people who are going to him to get their hope back, to try to fix these situations they've had in their lives. It was just perfectly done to make him, where we, once again, we sort of, he's humanized it for the first half of the episode, and then we're like, oh my God, fuck this guy.
Yes.
He's a monster. He's lying to these people's faces as he sucks out their hope. Like, just really well done.
Absolutely. So let's jump back to Ty and Tandy and what's going on with them.
Yeah, so they they're trying to track Andre down. They're both like, wow, we have got to do this. And Mayhem is sort of working with them. She had told Tandy to stay out of it, but she's then like, okay, I'll do this. Let's figure it out.
I like this. I mean, before Mayhem ultimately loses it towards the end, I think Emma Lahana, who's the actress who plays Bridget O'Reilly in Mayhem, did a really good job of splitting the difference in her performance. Like, you could see her wrestling with every decision as if there was a conversation going on in her head between Bridget and Mayhem saying, no, let's do this. No, we need to approach this way. No, try this my way this time.
Yeah.
Without saying it out loud at all, but she does agree to help them, but it seems very begrudging the entire time.
Yes, for sure. She has a little curl in her hair too, which is like little like yeah. Ooh,
I'm Superman
all the way.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, not that kind of curl.
Oh, okay.
And you can see Tandy sort of like being pushed along. She's in crisis mode trying to catch Andre, so she's pushing on Mayhem to be like, I'm willing to do anything. Let's do this, which is another tension in the episode. They find Leah, Andre's assistant, who he had thrown out of the car after he sucked all the hopes out of her. And rather than let her go in the ambulance, they take her back to the church.
How did you feel about that? I mean, I think this was the one that I felt very split about, because this certainly falls under Tandy doing whatever she needs to get to Andre, but using the idea of, oh, she is going to be traumatized because there's these ambulances who've been kidnapping women, but using that for her own ends is not great.
Not great, but also they're like out of options. I mean, they sort of split here. Ty goes off and he tries to get some of the local New Orleans gangs to help him track down where Andre is, while Tandy, meanwhile, is doing this. And yeah, they're both, this show is always like struggling with the idea of what justice is. And that's why we have sort of at the same time, Ty on the phone with his mom. And he's like, how's Connors? And she's like, good. He's good.
Fine.
Everything's fine here.
Not dead.
Not dead at all. Which That makes me think she did kill him.
Right.
And Ty, you can tell, is suspicious of his mother.
Right.
There. And so it's like, was that justice if she did actually kill him?
I think that's the worst possible thing, right? Because he could have cleared Ty's name. So if she did kill him, that took away Ty's chances of freedom.
Yeah.
She essentially sacrificed one son for revenge for another one's death, if that's what she did.
And that, to me, is a really interesting thing that they'll have to resolve next episode.
And I'm sure they'll resolve it. It'd be like,
you know,
everything's
what?
Fine.
We had quite a crazy season, but let's move on to the next one. That's how television works.
Yeah, let's all get some soft-shelled crabs.
Yeah, let's just have milkshakes and have a little flash forward in the middle. They decide to, Tandy goes into Leah, Andre's assistant's head, and is like, whoa, it is pretty hopeless in here. And Mayhem has to be like, we need Ty. If Ty can go in, we can figure this out.
Because what they realize, and they played on this a lot more last season, we've been playing more in this lower dimension, but Ty is able to access fears, Tandy is able to access hopes, but together they're able to access something that is more obviously cohesive, but also they found last season a bunch of doors in people's heads, and they were only able to enter those doors together. So what they realize is they will only be able to get through with both of them.
Yeah, and I love that, putting them together. Also, this season is all about, I mean, sort of like last season too, like them accessing this hope and fear power, which is interesting because you feel like this show is going to be about like light daggers and teleporting and stuff, but it's really about this other side of their powers that weren't really in the comics, where they can access people's hopes and fears. And I really like that. I feel like that plays more in television because it's much more dramatic to be about getting inside people's heads and in this underdimension where all of these metaphors can spring out.
Yeah. The other thing that's been interesting about splitting them apart that's really underscored in this episode is their different approaches to figuring out how to be a hero. That you expect in a show like this that it would be they slowly train and then they figure out their powers and they're like, what are we like as a team? But they're very different in terms of how they want to approach things, how they want to approach being heroes, how they want to attack that. Ty is much more into peaceably using his powers, while Tandy is really being pushed in the more vigilante direction.
Yeah, she's getting like magic Hadouken type Dragon Ball Z powers, while Ty is, they're both getting sort of better at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, Ty teleports and doesn't even drop a cell phone call.
Right.
That must have taken them so much work.
Yeah. One of my favorite shots in the episode is when Ty leaves towards the beginning and Tandy's like, wait, where are you going? He's like, I'll see you later. And he's like, whoop.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fucked up.
And she's just standing there being like,
never date a teleporter. Am I right?
No, it's the worst.
So they, while they're in Leah's mind, Andre just like shows up, or in the underworld.
In the lower dimension.
In the lower dimension.
Yeah, because he's able to jump in and out of there now. He's powerful enough to do that.
Yeah.
And they get into the memory. They see him in the memory. And then he turns and looks at them. And he's like, you can't hurt me here.
Yeah, great moment. Yeah,
absolutely
so
great.
Cool.
And they immediately get out of there because they realize this isn't their place either. The real world isn't their place. And the lower dimension isn't their place either. There's no place that's safe from him at this point.
Yeah. And that's when he lays out his plan to strike the blue note for everyone and basically take all of the hopes out of everyone in New Orleans and turn everyone into like a little zombie.
Right. The other thing that we should mention that we forgot in the recap, or not in the recap, mentioning earlier on, is the woman that he sucked all the hope out of is humming a tune. And that's the tune that he needs to play to unlock this door in order to become a god.
Yeah. Pretty convenient.
Yeah. Really worked out real well for him.
For the bad guy.
Yes.
Tandy and Mayhem talk about murdering the girl, and that's where we see Tandy step back from going over the line, which I thought was great.
Yep.
She was really set up to go through with it, but then she said something that Mayhem's like, she was going to do all these horrible things for you. She was going to like lock you up, turn you, like let men rape you at any moment. And she's like, she's also a victim. She was victimized by the same person that we're trying to get. Thought that was a great, great conversation. Everyone gets their own point of view that is not right and not wrong.
Yeah.
And that's so rare, I think, on shows.
Yeah.
She beats Mayhem.
There's also a great moment we should mention during their fight where Mayhem has her claws to Tandy's throat. Tandy has a light dagger to her throat, and then they step back from it. They realize we can't do this to each other, and they pull back.
Yeah,
which I liked a lot. Like, I liked that moment of them being at this detente, but neither one of them wanting to go through with it. Like, either one of them could, but it's not about, like, I don't want to hurt myself. It's about, I don't know if I can actually hurt you.
Right, yeah. Which is a great choice when you have no idea what's going on.
Yes.
Which is everyone in the show at all times.
Yeah.
So he's playing the music from the vivay. He's reaching all the people at once.
Wait, we should step back and talk about Ty's plot line. Because he has a whole thing that he goes through, and we get an Easter egg, Easter egg in his plot line. So his thing, meanwhile, is he's going up after a bunch of drug dealers that supplied the drugs to the ambulance drivers who were stealing and kidnapping the women. He does this by reconnecting with a childhood chum of his in a diner. And that dude is reading a newspaper about Luke Cage.
Ah, what a connect.
R.I.P. Luke Cage.
Doing fine. He's just in the news.
Yeah, I guess. The funny part about it, continuity-wise, and I wonder where this happened, but when we last left Luke Cage, he was a villain running a club in Harlem, and they're talking about him as if he's a hero, which is fine. I'm not going to...
It's a slightly different Luke Cage.
Sure. Yeah. It also is very interesting, not too surprising, but because they are very complimentary, but it's interesting that the majority of the references with the Marvel Universe that have happened on Cloak & Dagger are to Luke Cage, because Bridget was an old partner of Misty Knights, and now we get specifically them talking about Luke Cage, about him being bulletproof in the show. And again, like, theme-wise, I think the two shows are very complementary. It would be interesting if there was more back and forth there. It would be interesting if some of the Marvel Netflix characters did show up on Cloak & Dagger if it continues, because I think they would work there. They would make sense.
Yeah, I agree. That's not going to happen, though, right?
Probably not.
Ah, see? Where's the home for all those folks?
I don't know. They're just kind of wandering around the streets of New York.
Yeah, just lost in the Netflix queue.
Picking up a bacon, egg, and cheese at the Loga Bodega.
Nice, good.
Then we see Ty, and we mentioned this a little bit earlier, but we see Ty on a rooftop taking care of two drug dealers. He keeps teleporting them and then dropping them off and teleporting them and dropping them off, and gives a big speech and says, listen, I can't completely stop you. I'm just one guy, but I'm not going to leave you alone. Like, I can't stop you from selling drugs, but you need to stop selling drugs that are allowing women to be taken.
Yeah.
And I really like that move a lot. Like, not giving the hero speech of like, you stop what you're doing. I did it. I stopped the drug trade. Because that's ridiculous. And the show does truck very much in realism despite the superpowers. So having him make a move that is a small move dealing with the immediate problem was smart.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. So to get back to the vivay.
Yes.
Andre has created the vivay on the ground. It's as he plays the notes, it is slowly unlocking it bit by
lighting
bit.
Up, yeah.
Ty and Tandy immediately, they try to track him down from the drug dealers. Ty finds out that they think he's at his old club. They get there. Turns out the club burned down. So they head to the original location of the club, track it down, and they see everybody that, I think this is the implication pretty clearly, but they see everybody that Andre has stolen the hope from standing there staring at him as he plays, and including Tandy's mom and everybody else.
Upsetting.
Very upsetting stuff. He's about to unlock the vivay, and Tandy... Ty says, quick, throw a dagger at me. Tandy throws a dagger at him. He cloaks over to Andre, and the dagger comes through him and hits Andre and knocks him down.
Yeah.
Except not really, because he already did it.
Yeah. So it was interesting. What does all that mean? Because it was sort of a cliffhanger where I was like, wait, what? They did this sort of dagger through the cloak trick, which we've never seen before.
Right.
And it feels like it might have some sort of implication for how their powers work.
I don't know. I hadn't really thought about that.
I don't know. The way it breaks down where, it could definitely be that Andre just won and sort of zapped them. So he opens the door in the record store and walks into the light. Is he a god now? We don't really know.
Right.
and the music sort of takes over the city. Meanwhile, Tandy and Ty are in just an empty room.
Yeah, so there's a lot to unravel there, and it's not immediately clear what happened. So my implication that I took from it is that, first of all, the dagger through the cloak thing, to me, I just took that as like classic comic books. They're always doing that in the comic books. There's this whole thing in the comics where Cloak has a hunger because, as they mentioned in the last episode, they riffed on the whole got their powers from radioactive heroin thing. Cloak has this hunger that needs to be fed, and Dagger feeds his hunger with her light daggers.
Yeah.
So I took that as a riff on that.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think that's kind of all that was. But in terms of Andre unlocking the Vevey, we saw in a previous episode that Tandy's dagger was the key. Like, it was a... not a donation, but the tribute that was given to the Loa? Is it a Loa?
Yeah. Papa Hegba, I think.
Yeah, Papa Hegba, inside of the lower dimension. So maybe that's what he needed. Maybe that was the last thing that he needed to unlock the Vevey, was that dagger.
Yeah, maybe. That could be. I don't know. That's interesting. Yeah, either way, it felt like what hitting him with a dagger was bad. Was a bad choice.
Right. Well, and it because it also, it disappeared. Like, it knocked him down, but it didn't cut him in any way.
Yeah, it went into him.
Yes.
And maybe the fact that it went through Cloak's powers at the same time, sort of mixing hope and fear and going into him, was what he needed to unlock it.
Yeah, we'll probably find out, I'd imagine, more next
episode. Someone's going to say, Moji Girl's going to be like, wait, you didn't do the dagger through the cloak trick into the bad guy, did you? And they're going to be like,
we did the only one we got.
That's our up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, BA, select, start move.
Now you got it.
That's what I said.
Man, that's why you're the number one Contra player.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, lots of stuff. I really liked how they amped it up considerably. One of the things that I liked about the season so far was last season was like zombie apocalypse, and this season felt so much smaller up until this episode where it was like, oh, oops, nope, yep. All of New Orleans.
Despair apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like that. How they amped it up and made it another city-threatening thing for them to stop. I have no idea how this all is going to end, but I'm very excited to check it out.
That's what I love about this show.
There we go. If you'd like to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on down. We'll chat with you about Cloak and Dagger. What else do you want to plug?
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live and at Cloak Jabber.
Yeah. Also, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. You can subscribe on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, Radio Public, or the app of your choice. And we'll see you next month at Jazz Fest. Free tickets, call in now.
Why are jazz stations at the very end of the radio dial? I don't know.
Jazz is evil.